I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pig. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Support for In the Garden comes from the Flower Farm. They still have trees available, as well as colorful dahlias for summer bouquets, including subscriptions for Never-Ending Color. Open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing.
You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on the side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot can griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't.
All right, and thank you for joining us for another episode of In the Garden. I'm your new host, Oren Pearson, and we've got Ed Byarski on the line. You there, Ed?
I'm here, Oren.
All right. And thanks for joining us here. Well, let's see. What are you up to in the garden this week, Ed?
Oh, among other things, since we've had so much rain in the past, this morning I took a bunch of hoops. This PVC, 3/4-inch PVC hoops that are 10 feet long, and put them over one of my newly replanted garden boxes. So I'm going to try to be somewhat in control of the amount of moisture that my plants get. You know, Mother Nature supplies sometimes more than we really want. Mm-hmm. So in this case, I'll have to water, although the ground is quite saturated, so it'll probably be a week or two before I'm going to have to do any watering in there. So that's something worth our trying, whether we can build bigger hoop houses, more greenhouses, or work on our drainage, because sometimes we need more moisture, and then there's those other times when we've got more than enough.
That's interesting. So these new hoop houses that you're putting together, are they how big are they? Are they going to cover a single bed or multiple beds?
These with the 10-foot hoops are just a single 4-foot wide bed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to lift, and I'll cover them with clear plastic. And so I'll have to lift up the side to be able to weed or harvest or do whatever I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Where I've got a bigger hoop house plus a couple of steel frame, one steel frame greenhouse. The other hoop house uses 20-foot, 1-inch PVC pipe with a 4-inch PVC pipe for a ridge pole that's drilled, so these pieces go through that. There's holes drilled every 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Going through that, and they cover two 4-foot wide boxes with a 2-foot path in between. So that is really nice. I can walk through that one.
Wow.
It's about 7 feet high in the middle.
Okay.
Very convenient. Like I talked about last week, I leave the ends open for ventilation.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's certainly warmer in there and drier in there. And that means I am responsible for providing them with the moisture, the plants in there,
mm-hmm.
that they need. So I can push the season a little bit on both ends and keeping that ground drier, particularly as we get more into when fall comes, by September, October, even November. I'll be able to keep harvesting, and it's drier, so there's fewer slugs there, too. So there's a whole bunch of advantages. And other than the disadvantage of having to water, which I don't mind so much, plants grow better in there.
Yeah. I've heard about, I think our local Farragut Farm does hoop houses over single beds, but I think they have them on maybe wheels or...
Yeah.
Rails?
Oh, yeah. They've got a slick system, which is great. And I just don't have enough flat ground like they do. My ground is sloping and up and down. I mean, the sloping part is good for drainage, but you pretty much need flat ground, and you essentially lay out rails upon which those hoop houses move back and forth. So they can start in one area. I think you ought to interview Bo and Maria, honestly, and get them to describe what they're doing, probably.
It's pretty innovative for this climate.
Of them and other people's places. So you can start stuff in a hoop house, start stuff early in the spring. Once those plants are up and growing, you can roll it along. If these are, you know, they may be 30 feet or 40 feet long on wheels, and you roll it over to the next section of beds, start some new stuff. And then when that's all growing and maybe that first bed is just about ready for harvesting after a month or two, then you roll it along into another one for the next crop. And then you can work it back if you're wanting things to mature. Or I think I saw the pictures on Facebook of their garlic crop where they rolled it over the garlic and they could do their digging and cleaning and hang them up underneath the frames to dry out, to cure, like we talked about before, and then bring them into the cell.
Yeah,
so it's a great system if you've got the space.
Right.
And certainly you could do it on a smaller scale if you've got, you know, something maybe, you know, like with mine, I've got these 10-foot-wide hoop houses here. Certainly if I had the space, the flat ground, I could roll those along with a sturdier frame than what I've got.
Right, right. Yeah, it makes sense. You could do it in a smaller way. Because
And that way then you don't have... All of your ground isn't covered with the hoops,
right?
But it's just covered as you need them, kind of. Some stuff you want to push a little harder, some plants you want to push along, and others maybe not so much.
Okay, so we've been talking about hoop houses and practices, because this week you're putting together some hoop houses.
Yeah, and one of the things to think about, of course, what you're doing, what you're building, how sturdy it's going to be, is whether these are going to stay up for the winter, or if you're, or at least if you're going to keep the covering on them for the winter, or remove the cover for the winter. So, obviously, I guess they'll need to be more sturdy if you're leaving them on over winter, where they're going to get snowed on, or you're going to need to put some props or 2x6 or 8 ridge poles and maybe vertical posts spaced out every 4 to 6 feet. I mean, we never know what we're going to get. Last winter, I probably could have left it up all winter long. It would have been fine. But this winter, I'm yet to decide. But I'll need to decide that in, say, end of October, whether I'll leave them covered. The advantage of leaving them covered is that you can get started again earlier in the springtime. But at least you want to cover your garden beds inside there with some clear plastic so they stay warmer and drier again, so that come, well, March or something, then we can get started early, then recover the hoops and get gardening again.
Right, right. So with the, yeah, that's interesting. So the garlic crop, it's doing its work over the winter of kind of establishing its roots, I suppose.
Right. And it's fine, you know, because normally my garlic is in the ground. Once I plant it, then I do cover it with some seaweed and some clear plastic, and then it's fine, you know, that's their blanket for the winter.
Yeah.
That gets uncovered usually mid to late March or so when the sprouts are starting to come up. But you can also get away with, because of our interesting winters we've had recently, with growing some, starting in the fall, even September, October, planting some kale and some spinach, some of these stuff that overwinters, just get it started so it's a few inches tall, and then it just holds there. It pretty much stops growing because of a low day length.
Oh.
But it will survive the winter, and then just as soon as the days start getting longer, usually by the 1st of March or sometimes earlier, it'll start growing, and you'll be able to harvest. We were harvesting spinach, at least by the end of March.
Wow.
This spring. So we can get away with that. Sometimes, let's see what else. We planted some of the peas at the end of February inside the hoop house, and mustard greens.
Mm-hmm.
Folks who like arugula, that can go in there early. So, you know, we're able to push the season farther and farther on each end.
Yeah.
Start earlier and last longer into the fall, assuming that we don't get really heavy snow or something like that.
Sure. So that's the value of hoop houses. And if you know your area's snowy, you want a sturdier hoop house probably. But you can, did you say you can start kale and spinach in the fall, and it'll get established and then hold through the whole winter?
Yeah, I mean, and you all you want really is two leaves. So again, I planted it. I think this winter I even planted some in January, and it took a while because it was pretty cool. But it started to sprout in about 3 weeks or so. I think we were, you know, it was a mild January, and so the greenhouse was warming up during the daytime. It's and you need to choose plants either that will sprout in very cool soil or are very cool weather tolerant,
mm-hmm.
like the kale and the spinach. And like I said, some of the other greens, mustard greens and such, are quite cold hardy. So that's a good thing. And still you're thinking, you know, you got to have ventilation in there, but you can put, they make these fabric blankets that will provide varying degrees of frost protection, too, if you want to keep some of these things going. The other thing, however, is that you, if you have these nice little tender plants in there, is still, you know, we were talking last week about slug protection. Well, those slugs can be active during winter, too.
Right.
You've got to be fairly vigilant about that, that you're making sure they're nice and clean. And not, because otherwise that's just prime slug habitat.
Makes sense. Yeah, it's the only thing out there for them to get into, so they want it, huh?
Right, exactly.
Hmm.
You know, so these, whatever boxes you're covering, you want to have good drainage in them for watering, and you've got to be thinking about fertilizing, too. But then the other thing to think about in our gardens now and for the future, even if we're planning ahead, is the drainage. And you know, the rains that we had most recently were heavy at times, and we got a lot of it. So whether there was water pooling up, ponding in and around the garden, well, anywhere in the yard, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
You know, we got to look at our drainage and what can we do to improve the drainage if need be.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the garden boxes, that probably is going to mean mixing some sand in with the organic matter, with the peat,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's pretty basic recipe, can be one part sand to one or two parts of peat, which can mean just your local muskeg that you can break up,
mm-hmm.
loosen up, and makes great soil. Makes really nice stuff. But having enough sand in there is really important to help the drainage. The peat mm-hmm. works to hold the moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's worth planning for when you're making these new garden beds. And you may need to have, you know, having gravel, maybe gravel paths around the boxes would be good, again, for drainage, and it's less slug habitat rather than having grassy paths around your garden boxes.
Okay, that makes sense. So, and these are really good things to be planning for or beginning to work on right now, aren't they?
That, and maybe if you know you've got serious, whether you've got springs or creeks popping up in your in and around your garden in your yard, maybe you're going to need to work on doing something like a French drain, actually putting in some pipes,
mm-hmm.
Pipes and gravel in gravel trenches. And ideally, that then you've got to figure, okay, where am I going to drain this extra water off to?
Right.
Because you cannot drain it off into your neighbor just because you're higher than your neighbors. You can't drain it over into your neighbor's yard or the lawyers gets involved and then it gets expensive.
Right. So, yeah, so when you're planning your drainage, you've got to think about where do you want to drain that water to, and what do you suggest, what should people be looking for?
Well, I mean, you know, maybe the most obvious thing is a ditch somewhere, or perhaps a nearby, if there's an existing drainage that you just, there's some water coming down in one area and you want to take it over to this other drainage, a low spot or whatever, that makes sense. If you're doing these trenches, the basics of a French drain, you dig a trench above whatever you're trying to protect or to dry out. Ideally, the trench is sloping to one side or the other where you're draining it toward.
Mm-hmm.
Down in the bottom of your trench, when you get down however whatever depth you want, then you lay fabric, filter fabric in the bottom, pipes with drain holes in them. And normally, if you look at a pipe, a 4-inch drain pipe, normally there's two rows of holes, and they are basically on one side of the pipe. They are, rather than three rows of holes, that'd be all the way around. Two rows of holes, and you want those holes kind of pointing on the downhill side, so it's more solid on top.
Mm-hmm.
Moisture then comes up and into the pipe and flows off in the direction that you want to. And then you may want to use, once you get it off the edge of you're trying to protect, then you might use solid pipe with no holes then to drain it off into that ditch or low spot or pond or whatever you have. And anyway, so if you're looking at this layers, you've got fabric in the bottom of your trench, you got the pipe in the bottom on top of the fabric, and then you put clean washed gravel on top of the pipe, and then you should have had wide fabric. So then your fabric you wrap up, you know, that came up the sides of the trench, will come over the gravel, the clean gravel that you put in there, wrap it over, and then you can put some sandy soil or something like that on above that. So you've got this buried trench which has pipe and gravel in it that is hopefully collecting that water that's flowing down the hillside that Mother Nature has provided.
Yeah. Okay, so can you describe one more time where you would want to plan for or position the holes in the drainage pipe?
Okay, so if you've got your trench and your fabric, filter fabric down in the bottom of the trench, and it comes up the sides of the trench also, the fabric does.
Yeah.
So the pipe has two rows of holes in it,
okay,
and they're kind of at a, well, if you're looking at the angle from the middle of the pipe, they're about 120 degrees apart.
Okay.
So those two rows of holes will be kind of on the bottom side of the pipe.
Hmm.
The top of it that you're looking down at, you shouldn't see any holes.
Right, because you're going to be
piling
gravel.
You have your pipe in the bottom, then you put your drain rock.
Gotcha.
In, you know, 1-inch washed rock or whatever it happens to be on top of that. See,
mm-hmm,
just a couple of inches, you know, and you're going to have to hold it down because if the gravel filters down, it'll tend to lift the pipe. So you want to hold the pipe down until you get the gravel on top of it.
Mm.
Then you wrap your extra fabric over the gravel,
mm-hmm,
because what you're trying to do is prevent moisture coming down from above and pulling sand and silt out of your whatever topsoil is and plugging up the pipe, getting into the pipe. You want to keep that water that's flowing through it pretty clean.
Yeah, yep.
And then you can put a layer of, you know, ideally a good draining soil on top of the fabric up to the top of your trench.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how deep your trench is. If it's, maybe it's 18 inches deep, maybe your trench is 3 feet deep if you're trying to get down deep enough to collect the water. And again, that's something, certainly with an open trench, you can see, okay, well, where is the water flowing? You know, is this trench deep enough, or do I need to go deeper to catch more of it?
Yeah.
That's flowing down this gentle slope right toward your garden or toward the back of your house. You want to keep, you know, same thing. You want to keep the moisture away from your house, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, draining it off to one side somewhere into a ditch. I don't know, maybe you've got a sump pump or a place where you can pipe it into something that you can pump it out,
mm-hmm,
away from the house or away from the garden. Maybe that's an option.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're the unlucky person in a subdivision and you're at the bottom of the subdivision and all the water comes down to you,
mm-hmm,
well, then it's got to find some other place to take it, drain it, pump it, whatever it takes.
Right, yep. Yeah, that makes so much sense, and it's a bit of work, but it needs doing.
Yes, exactly. It is work. You know, hire a couple of teenagers to do the trench digging and all that and supervise them carefully.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and then hauling the rock, if you're hauling this rock or gravel in buckets or wheelbarrows, whatever it is a lot of work. You know, mm-hmm, you're looking at, I mean, for the pipe, the fabric, or the drain pipe, some of it comes in 10-foot lengths. Although some of it also comes in a big roll, so I mean you can get like 100-foot rolls of the stuff, and they even have some of the pipe, and this is like the corrugated black flexible stuff, which is nice to have that flexibility if you happen to hit a rock or there's a buried stump there, in the way that you can't dig out,
mm-hmm,
so you can kind of use that flexible pipe to go around it, and some of this drain pipe that you may buy locally even comes with the fabric over it already. They call it it's basically pipe in a sock.
Hmm.
So you've got the fabric right on top of the pipe that's all put together.
Which makes
your life even easier.
Right, a much less likely to clog up the pipe with silt and stuff. Yeah. Gosh, okay, that's good to think about. And this is a great time of year to be working on that because you've still got pretty decent conditions to be out there working hard. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you do it while it's raining, of course, then you can see that you're getting your slope properly, you know, that you are actually draining. I guess that can be an advantage, too. Or sometimes you, yeah, like I said, sometimes a spring seems to pop up in the backyard and in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you're digging, you may hit where there is essentially an underground drainage panel, and so that's kind of that's ideal. I mean, that's what you want to catch and divert somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. That's good knowledge. We're lucky to have you here on this program, Ed.
Yeah, well, having gardened in rain country for, you know, 30-some years, and a little bit of Wrangell, Petersburg, Sitka, and Juneau, they all have more or less rainfall. I mean, I'm more fortunate now where I live. At least I'm only getting 50 to 60 inches of rainfall compared to 100 to 120 in Sitka and Petersburg.
Yep.
So, yeah, we can do a little more. And, again, that also makes a difference in what plants you choose. Trees, shrubs, perennials, all of that stuff, as far as how much moisture can they tolerate. Well, if it's soggy all the time, that limits your options, where the better drainage you have and the more sun you have, then that gives you more choices that you can plant and grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good stuff for us to be considering this week as we think about what does it really mean to be working hard in the garden in rain country. What are we planning for? Drainages, soil work, plant selection, you know, drainages in your beds by including sand, actual French drains or other kind of diverting the water from running down your neighboring slopes into your own garden or, you know, your property in general. These are all things that take kind of observation and curiosity and just that little bit of work, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, your garden works. You've dealt with the otherwise intimidating amount of rainfall that can almost just disappoint you too much. It's just not working. It's too waterlogged. You're leaching your nutrition or nutrients out of your beds, and it's just too disappointing. But if you just take that next step and work on drainage and work on your soil, choose the plants that can survive in those kind of conditions, next thing you know, you've got a productive, awesome garden going on.
That's right, and you can share it with your friends and relatives. So, I mean, that's really what gardening should be, feeding your family and hopefully helping feed some others.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for this knowledge and conversation, Ed, and I think next week you're going to be traveling, right? So we're going to take a week off, is that right? And then when you get back, we'll dig in and talk about the next thing going on as summer kind of turns into late summer.
Right, later summer. More sunshine still. Let's not talk about the F word.
No, it's not here yet. Right, we're still working on our summer garden.
Okay,
thank you so much, Ed. Thanks to all our listeners out there, and enjoy your gardens.
Okay.
All right.
Bye, Art.
Bye-bye. And before we leave you today, we want to make a little announcement and offer up an invitation to the community. KFSK is going to be collaborating with Christina Sargent and the Community Garden to put together a community garden tour. This is going to take place on Sunday, August 21st, in the afternoon, starting at around 1 and ending at around 3. The tour will begin at the community garden, and then all of the participants will load up onto the school bus. Hoopy will be our driver, and we will tour around to select gardens. And it'll be an opportunity to get gardening tips and see what others are doing while enjoying some good company and some delicious refreshments put together by the Daily Ration. And it's a little bit of a fundraiser for the station here. The cost per participant is $20. And you register by coming into the station and putting your name on the list or sending me an email, Orin, O-R-I-N, at kfsk.org. And you can call in, too, to put your name on the list. And then you would just pay the day of. And again, that's the Community Garden Tour. Coming up soon, August 21st in the afternoon. That's a Sunday. So yeah, we'd like to encourage people to consider participating as guests on that. And if you haven't been contacted by us, but you're really in love with your own garden and you want to be one of the host gardens, also let me know, or contact Christina Sargent via Facebook or however you'd like. Okay, thanks so much. Support for this program comes from the Flower Farm, where you can get your trees, including cherry, apple, katsura, mountain ash, golden chain, maple, dogwood, choke cherry, and lots of colorful dahlias, bouquets,